Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Dry, and my name is Ben Harrison.
I'm Wet, and I'm Adam Pranica. What is that in reference to?
To the story you said before we turned on the microphones about how you were mad at me because you were getting rained on in Seattle and checking the weather in LA where it's 70 degrees most of the time.
Wow, so I guessed right with what I needed to say in that moment. 50% chance of getting it, and I got it.
Yeah, you did it. You did good.
Yeah, it's been piss raining in Seattle, Ben. It hasn't been great. The sort of rain that's kept me inside for days at a time, and that's not good for my mental health.
No, you gotta close rings, man, in order to maintain.
I've had a good start to the year as far as like waking up early every morning and meditating and like going to the gym. Like I'm doing that stuff, but yeah. I'm not going for walks because my dog can't walk. That's part of it.
Like right.
And I feel low-key bad about walking by myself and leaving him at home. And so I kind of feel like a walk martyr, right?
The reason you feel bad is that you set up like a FaceTime between you and him and you maintain eye contact with him the entire time you're walking. And
look at him during. Yeah, that's not nice. Ben, something happened to me last night that was pretty harrowing that I would like to share with you. And I thought maybe in exchange you could share a story right back. This may be the beginning of a new segment. This may be the only one of its kind, but I kind of want to give you a jazz horse update.
Tell me you love jazz.
Horse, earth horse.
Okay, boys, saddle up. You're as handy with a shooting iron as you are with a woman's heart.
I'm beginning to see the appeal of this program.
I suggest you find a new line of work.
It's okay, girl. Just a scratch.
We may never do this again, but something significant happened last night, and I'm still not over it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I do want to do this segment, and I do want it to be a regular segment, but I do suspect that a lot of people are getting angry at us about talking about jazz horse so much.
So, I'll keep my story short.
Should we say what Jazz Horse is?
Jazz Horse is Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
That's all it is.
So I'm riding my horse. I'm riding Genuine out out in the boonies, right? This is an area I haven't explored yet. I've been a little weird about how I open up my map.
Mm-hmm.
Exploratory-wise.
You're trying to make the fog of war describe a dick.
Yeah. So I'm riding around and I cross a river, and any player of Oregon Trail knows you need to be really careful crossing these rivers. But I launched on through a river and then got to the other side, and the other side had like a little rocky outcrop that it looked like you could ride up. Mm-hmm. And so I gallop full speed through the river, and then I'm on the other side and I make a hard right to get up this hill, and my horse does not like this movement. The horse and me miss the turn and then end up running straight up the mountain. And that ends up flipping me ass over tea kettle. It ends up flipping Genuine ass over horse tea kettle. And yeah. Genuine's in the water bin. And and Genuine's been knocked out. And just as I have been knocked out, I don't die. But by the time I come to, Ben, RSVP Genuine.
Oh.
Genuine has drowned. In spite
Damn.
Of my best efforts, like I try to get on him in the water, I can't get on him. I try to lasso him out of the water.
Oh,
he won't leave. I was so distraught over this. It was like the death of Artax in the Swamp of Sadness. Like I kept on wanting to pull him out, but he didn't want to come out. It was really awful.
That's rough, dude.
So then I had to grab my saddle and walk 45 minutes to the closest stable, which is like the shittiest punishment. I get attacked by two panthers on my way. Like,
whoa.
I arrive at my stable, like covered in blood, carrying carrying my saddle. It was not a good night of jazz horse for me, Ben, but I ended up getting a new horse. He is a war horse. Are you familiar with a war horse and what they look like?
Do they have like bigger feet?
Oh, Lordy, Ben, that horse is thick.
Yeah, those
horsey thick. which is what I named Horse 2. Horsey thick with two C's is my new ride, which made me feel slightly better while I'm grieving the death of Genuine.
Trogdor is the horse that I got at the beginning of the game, and I have dabbled, I've experimented with the idea of buying a new horse, but so far Trogdor has survived, and it has caught my breath a couple of times when, you know, attempting to board a moving train or something, and Trogdor takes some damage, but fortunately, she's been through it with me, through thick and thin.
Good buddy of mine ended up killing his horse very early on in the game, attempting a train boarding, and it was so early that he didn't have anything close to the amount of money of getting another horse, and he was so unskilled in any other way that he had to walk around for a long time.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Kind of changed the game on him.
That'll show you.
I've never jumped to a train. It seems scary.
Yeah, it's a little scary. You gotta ride pretty fast alongside it. Then you hit square.
Bet Horsey Thick could handle that no problem. The thing about Horsey Thick is he's like a fucking tank. Like, he can go straight up mountains. He can go he can go more vertical than my old horse ever could. He doesn't get tired.
Wow.
He takes great big shits, Ben. Like, the kind that could dam a river.
Game really won me over when I saw a dog take a poop.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I was just walking around a town and a dog was doing one.
Don't you and me see enough dogs taking poops? I was telling my wife last night, like, we do shifts with our dog, taking him outside, and he's got to be on a leash.
That'd be nice.
He's got to be on a leash, you know, post-surgery, walking around in our backyard. So I get the late night just before bed action, and it occurred to me that like I've got to use my phone flashlight to see where he's dropping these shits in the grass, because you can lose them pretty easily. And I was just thinking about if my camera had somehow been tied to the flash function on my phone, to the light function of my phone, this entire time, how many pictures of dog shit would be there.
Yeah,
kind of a lot. Probably 50 pictures of dog shit, Ben.
Yeah, that would be, you know, when the FBI finally cracked the 4-digit code on your phone, they would be like, oh my God, he's much sicker than we could ever have even imagined.
One of the worst I've ever seen. Lock him up for life.
Well, Adam, I'm really sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Ben. It gives me some comfort to hear that.
Jazz horse at its best is very chill, and it sounds like this was a non-chill evening with jazz horse.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a new start with a new horse.
Yeah, I think you can do it, but you know, allow the mourning process to take its course. You know, Can't rush these things.
That's good advice.
Much like you can't rush back to a stable when you've lost your horse.
That saddle's pretty heavy. You can't run very long.
It's going to take 45 minutes minimum.
That's what I get for exploring unknown territory, Ben.
Yeah.
Much like two of the characters on Deep Space Nine do in Season 3, Episode 22, Explorers.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Speaking of exploration, Ben.
Yeah.
We have discovered a brand new character in our cold open.
We sure have.
And she has got a great big cough.
A set of coughs, even.
Yeah.
Because it's never just one.
No.
Dr. Bashir is doing a little bit of... he's doing something that I sort of aspire to being able to do, which is take some work down to the local pub and have a drink while you finish your work day. It's kind of blending happy hour with the end of the day, which holds some appeal to me.
Yeah.
You know, there are hazards to this, which is that you encounter... a potential romantic interest while you're still going over the numbers or whatever. And that's what happens to Bashir here. And, I mean, she's just as romantically interested in him as he is in her.
Oh, dear. How long have you had that cough?
She's looking for a field diagnosis, Ben.
Yeah. And I'm surprised he didn't, put his ear against her chest, too. To listen for this, because based on how she's acting, I kind of got the feeling that that's what she was hoping he would do.
There is if you follow their eye line, and especially Bashir's eye line, like she's standing and he's sitting for maybe half of the scene before standing again, but his eye line never wavers from her face. And it's so chaste in that way. It made me wonder if they did a couple of takes where he is distracted by the décolletage.
She's got beautiful hands, beautiful décolletage.
Yeah, I mean, I also liked the way his performance goes from kind of like stunned surprise that anyone is expressing interest in him at all into being kind of smooth and debonair with her. You know, we've seen a lot of him engaging in what I would call romantic mishaps. Mm-hmm. And this actually seems like it's heading somewhere.
I kind of wonder why this doesn't happen more often. I feel like Dr. Bashir is a pretty good-looking dude, probably in the upper 20% in the looks department, I would say, on the station.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's on the 80th percentile.
Yeah.
He's smart and he's got a good gig.
He's no longer lecherous.
He's probably not getting sent into super dangerous scenarios all the time, which is just a calculus you'd have to do with another officer, probably.
Yeah.
He's got a stable lifestyle. I feel like there's a lot of appeal in that.
He gets interrupted by Dax, who is kind of fucking with him.
Yeah. Dax has that thing where she can kind of seem... naive or like she's kind of missing cues. It's never the case, right? Like she's playing romance chess to his romance checkers.
If they're friends, why is she doing this to him?
Because so much fun.
Yeah, it's the fun factor, isn't it?
I mean, like Lita is a very fetching young lady, so Getting to blow Bashir's chance with someone like her just seems like good sport for somebody who's lived seven lifetimes, right?
Yeah, it's a sport fuck with.
But Dax is delivering information to Bashir that the Lexington is putting in, and despite his past iPad that says GTFO, she actually does distract him away from... young Lita, who does not make another appearance in the episode after this.
This connects to Dr. Bashir's origin story, and it's an origin story totally focused on a pre-ganglionic fiber being confused with a post-ganglionic nerve. Like, that is the thing that makes Dr. Bashir who he is. And that mistake is what caused the valedictorian of his medical school to be the celebrated doctor she is, and what has made Dr. Bashir the chief medical officer on Deep Space Nine. Like it's a fork in his career road. It changed everything for him. And this, and Dr. Lenz represents that fork.
She's the CMO of the Lexington, which is due at the station shortly. And that forces him into a very introspective mode.
It makes him nervous because he's not articulating it, but he knows he has to see her and talk to her about this. Like, there is no just casual awareness of someone being in the same place at the same time. Like, something has to happen, and he knows that.
This is a small town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that the writer that first wrote down the phrase preganglionic fiber, comma, postganglionic nerve gets like $1,000 check every time they use that construction in an episode?
It's a real don't you see, huh?
I mean, like, I just wonder what the rules are. Cause, like, I know that, like, there are a lot of times where, like, they bring a character back, but they have to give the character a different name, even if it's the same actor, because they don't want to pay a writer for creating that character.
Right. There's a piece of trivia in the Sarlacc Mouth episode where when Sarlacc Mouth calls Dr. Bashir out on that mistake, he mentions that there's no way any medical professional could confuse the two. That's actually true. Like, that's the reason that Sarlacc Mouth said that, was because those in the medical community know that, like, it's like confusing a hair follicle with a foot. Like, there's just no way anyone could confuse those two things.
So those are real things.
They are real things, and they are unconfusable.
Wow. The next scene is Jake Sisko at home cramming an iPad under his butt when his dad gets home in a concealment of the computer that I'm sure most teenage boys have experienced at one time or another. And I would have loved to focus on that, except for we've got to talk about beard, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't we?
Sisko grew that beard.
That beard's thick.
It is thick.
It's thicker than I remember.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about growing the beard as the moment where Deep Space Nine goes from bad to good. And I'm curious. I had no idea when it was going to happen. I kind of thought it was soon. But I was maybe guessing that it would be after the season break, which is coming up. Interesting to see that it happens at toward the end of season three, but not at the end of season three.
Yeah, and the quality change, I would argue, does not happen this episode.
Right, like, I think that the last two episodes, that two-episode arc, was much more a quality change signal than this beard.
Right, right. One thing that you don't want to do immediately after hiding your laptop is engage in some affectionate, non-sexual father-son touching.
Yeah.
And Sisko comes right in for the hug, and I think
that's that hug where you bend at the waist to put a little distance between the groin and the...
Yeah, if I'm Jake, I probably stay seated. I think that's smart.
Jake has the iPad mini, but Sisko has the big one, the Pro.
Yeah.
He comes in and shows Jake a blueprint on the screen for a Bajoran space sailing ship. Uses solar sails to sail around the solar system. And there are legends that the Bajorans figured out how to visit Cardassia 800 years ago. And this is compared to being contemporary with humans taking to the seas. Like, the Bajorans figured out interstellar space travel way earlier, or at least that's the legend. It's not necessarily supported by the archaeological record.
Nothing says bottle episode like someone engaging in a hobby. And that's the gauntlet that gets thrown down here. The bottle gauntlet is thrown. And it's cool to have a big time and resource consuming hobby on the brink of war, isn't it? Like I wish they cross cut to the other side of the wormhole, and it's just Jem Hadar guys training and sharpening things, and like
you mean like mid metalworking montage, yeah, where Sisko's putting the ship together, yeah, they also are showing the Jem Hadar,
yeah, like building their ships, and they're just loaded up with guns,
sharpening blades and jacking themselves up on that Tetracell light.
Yeah, like I don't know, Ben, kind of seems like you got some other shit to do. Not only that, but like, it's fine to have a hobby during wartime. I think it's probably something that keeps you sane. But Ben Sisko's hobby is taking him off the station in an unarmed ship that is basically a sitting duck.
And not only that, like heading toward a semi-hostile yeah, portion of space. And also, he's pulling Kira and O'Brien off of, I'm sure, actual work to help him with this. Like, he totally deputizes them to help him get it set up.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cool boss move, but it's an irresponsible boss move, too.
Yeah. Gold Ducat. Ducat.
Gold Ducat. So,
O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Is very skeptical about the ship's ability to have made this journey, and Kira, in keeping with her spiritual nature, is like, oh yeah, this happened exactly as it was written. Like, I can't believe you don't believe this.
Yeah.
It's sort of a spiritual versus scientific argument happening on screen for maybe 10 seconds. That's all we get, but...
But it's good to get a little dusting of a character moment.
Yeah.
I like the terminology used, like the idea that Chief doesn't think the thing is space-worthy.
Yeah.
And they talk about like the idea that the Romulans think they've invented everything before everybody else.
I love that part.
Nice, efficient world-building stuff in this scene that I really liked.
Can you recall a time when Romulan scientific vanity was stated or seen in that way?
No, I don't think I can. I mean, I think so much of the time they are just the bad guys on the other ship, or yeah, kind of, you know, we've met so few Romulans, and I don't know if we've met many Romulan scientists at all. So
it'd be great if that was a more overt character trait, like as soon as Tomalak decloaks and comes on screen facing Picard, he's like, hello Picard, I just decloaked my ship with the cloaking device that my people discovered.
And then yours didn't.
I couldn't help but notice that your ship has no cloaking device. Your people did not invent the cloaking device the way mine did. Also, yeah, we invented the cat basket phaser holster.
We invented getting short bangs way before they were in. They're also hipsters. We stuck with vinyl through thick and thin.
We cut our own bangs and we aren't even depressed.
We don't care that they don't necessarily flatter the shape of our face.
Bangs! I got bangs!
Congrats.
So Sisko wants to make the ship using the tools of its time, which means like a sawzall and a bunch of hand tools. He refutes O'Brien's proposition of like, why don't you just walk up to a replicator and replicate all these pieces? It'd be great.
I mean, speaking of hipsters, this is like...
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
Seriously, Sisko is getting back to his artisanal, handcrafted roots.
Yeah.
Which I make fun of, but I like that shit.
Yeah.
And he wants Jake to go with him. He wants Jake to be in on this project, but... You know, Jake has been taking secret looks at iPads lately, and that's
Jake's looking forward to some home alone time.
He's like, is there going to be Wi-Fi and like privacy on this sailing ship? Or
God, Jake's tunic in this app looks like it's sewn from an assortment of grandma's potholders. It is really something, Ben.
Yeah. I kind of like it, though.
The Jake collection of tunics is growing, I think. I don't think we've seen this one before.
He's really grown up right before our eyes. I feel like this episode really made me realize how much bigger and more grown up looking he is than when we first met him.
It'd be fun if Jake was also sporting a goatee.
Oh, you too?
Dad!
I looked at a picture of like contemporary Ciroc Lofton.
Yeah.
Still a very good looking man.
Yep.
How the fuck did this guy get away with going from being like 11 years old to being a full-fledged grown-up with never having an awkward period?
Great question. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of imagine his awkward period predates his time on DS9.
Oh, maybe.
That's when it would
happen.
You think
Macaulay Culkin just hates this guy's guts?
Yeah, whenever they get together for child actor meetings, it's really awkward.
One group that is not super thrilled about Sisko's new hobby is the Cardassian military. We get a FaceTime with Gul Dukat, who is, you know, and like this is set up a little bit in that conversation with O'Brien and Kira, but it's pretty clear that this is something that the Cardassians don't want the world to know about. They don't want people to get the idea that the Bajorans were ever more advanced than them, because I guess it'll just make the occupation look more criminal and awful.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I inferred a similar to Romulan technological vanity here in play as well.
Yeah.
In that same way.
But, like, I mean, like, it's an interesting sensitivity to deal with, right? It's like, I don't know, like the Turkish government doesn't want to admit that the Armenian genocide happened. Like the Cardassians don't want to admit that the Bajorans had like a sophisticated interstellar culture before they were subjugated by the Cardassians, and like a public demonstration of the possibility of that has like major diplomatic ramifications. And it doesn't really seem like Sisko gives that much of a fuck about that. In a way that I thought was surprising. Like, he's usually pretty sensitive to diplomatic considerations.
And, like, most things that Gul Dukat does, like, it's kind of a veiled threat here, too. In the sense that, like, he can't guarantee his safety. He does that thing where he's like, you know, it'd be a shame if something happened to you so far away from home on this little rickety ship without any defensive ability.
If something goes wrong, Major Kira can have a runabout to me within an hour.
An hour can be a very long time.
It is a perfect veiled threat, and it seems like that is going to be the danger present in this episode.
Right, right.
Gul Dukat is saying, like, maybe it'll be Maquis or something.
Maquis?
But the implication is definitely the Cardassians are going to look for a way to make this not ever get out.
Ben Sisko's a little bummed because Jake has said he isn't going. The reason seems to be that it is the arrival of a girlfriend that would prevent this from happening, but the message that Jake Sisko checks is a little bit ambiguous in nature. And so when we learn that Jake has received a communique from Wellington, New Zealand, that doesn't quite comport with the idea of a visiting girlfriend. And, and especially doesn't jive with Jake's change of mind and his willingness to go.
It's like good news that means Jake can go on the trip.
Right.
So we're left to puzzle. And so they head off. This is, I think I was speculating about whether a shot in a recent episode was the first CG ship in DS9. This is definitely a CG ship.
Right.
Unequivocally, and it's the Bajoran sailing ship that the Sisko gentlemen have boarded and are taken out for a spin. And I really like the kind of the design of this thing. Like on the interior, there's a great deal of physicality in how they rig the ship and how they how they get it going. Like when they're pulling on a lever, they really like throw their weight into it in a way that, you know, you don't always design a set to be able to withstand like a couple hundred pounds of force when somebody pulls on something or whatever. And making the choice to do that really gave this a great sense of tactile realness that you don't get in a lot of Star Trek sets.
Yeah, you know how like sometimes you'll see an actor pick up a coffee mug and it's clear by the way they're handling it that the mug is empty?
Yeah.
You don't get the sense that the mug is empty when they're winding these sails, right?
Yeah. They head out from the station and they're going to deploy the sails. So they get on either side of the thing and Sisko says, "Crank it with all you've got, Jake." And Jake says, "Oh, I've been working on that." And so they crank away, and they get these sails unfurled, and they're off.
And they're Odo.
"Thanks for bringing me along, guys. Let's catch some of these solar winds."
"Hey, I don't want to embarrass you, Jake, but this isn't the first time I've seen you crank it." "I could be any inanimate object in a room."
"You know,
gotta be more careful, son.
You wouldn't even know if you were cranking me." "I mean, I would never do that to you, but think about it."
"To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale,
fucking pale.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my instinct. I don't use the bucket anymore."
I thought for a ship without its own propulsion system, the ship's ability to dodge the docking ring and leave was a pretty slick move.
Not quite clear how that worked.
No.
I don't really know that much about solar sails. I wonder if we have any like space physicists in the audience that can tell us whether this is a realistic ratio of sail to ship size.
Well, I can tell you that it's not, Ben, because I did a little research, and evidently these sails would have had to be miles and miles long.
Yeah.
In order to affect any sort of propulsion.
That's sort of what I pictured, but they're much more proportional to an ocean sailing vessel.
Right, right. Jake has a look around the interior for the first time, which is not a good time to look around for the first time, I think, when you're going on a trip with your pop. He discovers the zero gravity rations. He discovers the composting toilet. He's really he's like, "No water?
This is the great house sitting deal that you found."
Yeah, they're gonna be sleeping on hammocks,
yeah.
which is not a super comfy long-term sleeping solution if you've ever tried it.
You wonder what the consideration was when this was zero gravity, because one point that gets made is that the only modification Sisko has made to the design is adding gravity nets in the floor.
Yeah, if you've chosen to go with gravity, I think it's okay to go with a functional toilet. Like, he chose gravity but chose non-gravity toilet.
Maybe the Sisko men don't have the same butt problems that you have, Adam.
I just think you need toilet continuity. Like, you make your toilet match your gravity situation. That makes sense.
If you have to yak in zero G... Do you just have to put your mouth on the shop vac toilet?
Oof. Yeah, I guess.
That's got to be it, right? Maybe there's like a plastic sleeve you can put over it, like one of those electric thermometers you put in your ear.
That is so gnarly to think about. Do not want to think about it.
Sorry.
Ben, similar to the horror of a person brandishing a guitar at a campfire, it turns out Jake wrote a story, and now that he has a captive audience, he wants his dad to read it.
Yeah, he pulls out
tough.
An iPad in one hand and a gun in the other and says, "You're going to read this now, Dad."
I can only imagine how ribald it is, given Jake's interests in the current day.
Given the prurience that he's displayed in writing it.
Yeah.
So Ben Sisko sits down to read this story, and we cut back to Deep
Space
Nine.
It's all morn porn.
Hammered, the series.
the Red Hammer Diaries.
Sisko sits down to read the story, and we cut back to Deep Space Nine, and the Lexington, a Dil Sol-class starship, has docked at the station. Bashir is frantically straightening the infirmary up to make it look just so. And Odo comes in to kind of taunt him in a way that I was a little surprised by. Like, since when is Odo the antagonist of Bashir?
Especially, like you remember when Odo flipped emotional shit at Garak and Garak, like, totally went over the top of him and big dogged him emotionally? I feel like this is the same thing happening here. What is Odo making fun of Bashir's emotions with respect to a woman about? Like, give me a fucking break, Odo.
Yeah, where's it coming from? Like, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if anything, I would expect O'Brien to be doing this, like, in a fun way.
Yeah, this is an O'Brien moment that I feel like wrote Odo into, because they're like, oh, fuck, we forgot to have Odo in this episode.
Yeah.
We've got him in the loaf and everything.
Instead, O'Brien is the wingman in the bar, where they kick it as they watch Dr. Lenz from afar, and Bashir sort of, like, gets up the nerve to approach her over the course of time, and then when he sees that Dr. Lenz is getting up to leave, he also gets up and sort of, like, sturdies himself for an interaction with her, and she walks by him like he isn't even there.
I loved his performance. It's hard to do the kind of subtle reaction to this that Alexander Siddig does, the kind of, like, series of emotions washing over his face are like, what was that even? And then it's like relief coupled with worry that he still has to close this circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun storyline. Like, it's very endearing of Dr. Bashir.
It felt very similar to the approach one often makes of a stranger in a social situation that they want to meet romantically.
Right.
Even though this is a professional situation, like, I don't get the sense at any point that Bashir wants to interact with her romantically. It's very pregnant with that kind of stress.
Right. And I think other people are kind of freighting it with that. Like,
yeah,
when Quark comes in and says, like, oh, you didn't tell me she's also banging.
Yeah. We do a fair amount of cross-cutting from here between the ship to Deep Space Nine in short order, because back on the sail ship, Sisko has finished the story and damns it with some faint praise.
I think it shows a lot of promise.
Ben Sisko is more physically affectionate than he is complimentary affectionate, I would say.
Yeah, he gives some kind of, like, constructive feedback, which is not necessarily the first thing you want to hear when somebody completes reviewing a creative work of yours. but Jake is really excited about this story, and also is, like, to his credit, pretty open to the feedback that his dad gives him. And, man, I really admired the way Jake deals with this scene, because he is getting some pretty damning faint praise from his dad. And is not, like, he doesn't get bent out of shape about it. And in fact, he pulls a prank on his dad in the midst of this. Like, Sisko's like, you know, what do you know about the Maquis? And Jake plays this prank where he, like, has him going for a second that he may have Maquis sympathies or have even joined the Maquis.
Yeah, really, you know, Cal Hudson and I hung out while he was at the station, and I really think he had a lot of good ideas. Jake's see, doing like, bits.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
I love it.
Ben, I feel like Sirach Lofton is really great in this episode, because it's the degree of difficulty acting as though you are hopeful that someone you care about is going to have a good opinion about something you've created feels very different from act like you're scared that a ship is going to shoot at yours and kill you.
Yeah.
And this is what Sirach Lofton gets to do on this show. He is acting with this kind of this granularity that I really admire. Like, he's like, I don't think a lot of people give his character or his stories a lot of credit because they're often, you know, like relegated to B and C story stuff, but he's doing some heavy lifting.
He doesn't have huge arcs, generally speaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. And this conversation gets cut short when the ship gets a banger dropped on it.
Right.
So, you know, we don't necessarily get to see this come full circle, but that's another testament to how good both of these actors are in this scene, is that they turn on a dime and they're doing Star Trek emergency patter mm-hmm. in short order in a way that is really fun.
Yeah, they're cranking on things with the quickness.
Yep.
And they're ejecting some sails and making some space garbage in the process.
One of the sails has gone bad. I couldn't quite get a sense of what happened to it, but yeah. There are, I guess, some like explosive bolts that they can blow, and the sail gets left in the dust, much like your horse, Jazz Horse. It's sad to part with it, but you know, sometimes you just got to deal with loss like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to that river and set up camp there. Think about Genuine for a while.
Pay some homage.
Yeah. Back on the station, Bashir and O'Brien are doing the only thing that one can do when they get stunted on in public, which is which is getting apartment hammered.
Yeah,
I love this. Like, the getting hammered in their private space is great.
This isn't a synth ale kind of night.
They rolled a Quark's bar, but they're doing it at home.
They're drinking a bottle of Wee Bairns, and there is an interesting connection between this whiskey and Star Trek. Would you like to know what that is?
Wee Bairns? I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. It's a prop that I think returns a couple of times in Deep Space Nine, but Wee Bairns is the whiskey that Captain Lorca drank with Admiral Bob.
No shit.
In that episode of Discovery.
Nothing like a single malt straight from the motherland.
So it is very canonical Trek whiskey.
Wow. I don't know how many people listening to this know who Captain Lorca and Admiral Bob are. But if you want to find out about that, you go listen to our other show, The Greatest Discovery, now in season 2.
You're a company man, Ben. Bashir and O'Brien are singing drunk. Ben, when was the last time you got singing drunk?
I think the problem is that I don't know that many songs. So I don't really get singing drunk. I might get rapping drunk before I get singing drunk, which is its own problem.
You do a karaoke drunk, though, don't you? That's a thing.
No? I'm not really a karaoke man.
Oh, well, that's too bad. Scratch that off the list of things we can do together.
I mean, I would watch you.
Bashir cannot understand how he got stunted on like that. O'Brien kind of gets it because O'Brien sees how hateable Bashir is because O'Brien hated him at one point. And
right.
This is a really fun drunk guy-to-guy conversation here because O'Brien is uncomfortable expressing affection for his good friend and instead does like plays the negative. He's like, and look at me now, I no longer hate you.
I came around.
Yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, and that's fun.
Remarkable vulnerability expressed by a guy who is super duper drunk.
Colomini,
this is O'Brien's I love you, man.
Yeah. Colomini has a great act drunk too, because it is not ham and cheese. It's just a little louder, a little slower, but it's not slurry. Neither of them slur, really.
I thought that Siddig's was maybe a bit weaker than Colomini's drunk.
Yeah. Pretty fun.
Yeah, it is really genuinely difficult to be drunk, though. And like, it's one of those things where like on set, it doesn't, you can't necessarily tell how it will play. Like I worked on a film one time as a PA, and like one of the characters had to be drunk in a scene, and I was like, man, did she actually drink for that scene? Like, that was great. And then when I saw the final product, I was like, yee.
Oh.
It just didn't work for some reason. Like, it, whatever thing makes it translate to film didn't work.
Hmm. Strange magic.
Yeah.
Back on the sail ship, Sisko and Sun are cranking it pretty hard at this point. It's time to bust out the hammocks. Jake Sisko says something here that really caught my attention.
Hammock time!
Yo!
That is definitely a bit, right?
I can't remember yo ever being said on Star Trek before.
But it's like an MC Hammer, thing? Yeah.
You think?
I think it's a little Easter egg.
All right. Jake's into classical music.
Yeah.
Like MC Hammer.
Ancient Earth Bard. Yeah. MC Hammer. What they're talking about is this school in Wellington, New Zealand that has offered Jake a writing fellowship. And we get a little backstory on how this came about. Jake didn't even apply. Like, Keiko took a story that he wrote and sent it to them. Remember Keiko, Adam?
I'm sorry, who?
It's that character that used to appear from time to time on the show, wife of Chief O'Brien.
Right. Oh, right. Now I remember.
Yeah. She's been gone for a long time.
Really has.
But gets name checked here. And to his credit, Sisko is pretty proud of Jake. Like, this isn't the episode where Jake says, I don't want to be in Starfleet. I want to be a writer. It's the episode where Sisko has made peace with that idea and is like actually being pretty supportive of this new ambition of Jake's, and talks to him about like how it was hard for him to go away to school when he first went away, and how like that was just on Earth where he could use the transporter to get home every night for dinner. But Jake is going to be truly very far away from Deep Space Nine if he takes this opportunity.
That was such a magical depiction of homesickness.
Yeah.
The idea that you could just beam cross country anytime you wanted to sleep in your own bed and eat your own food.
Sounds like Ben Sisko racked up a lot of sky miles during that first semester at the academy.
Jake kind of wants to stick around because he doesn't want his dad to be alone. It's been a year since he's had a serious lady, and the last lady that he was serious with was a ghost woman, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Ghost Woman?
It's a vague memory. Did Ben Sisko fuck a candle?
I mean, what Jake couldn't possibly know is that Sisko fucked both Dax and Kira, like, yesterday.
Yeah. That's probably not a story you tell your son when you get home, right?
Ben's like, you know, I medium enjoyed your story. How'd you like to read this?
talk about cranking it with all you've got.
Hot Nights in the Mirror Universe by Ben Sisko.
Hot Nights, Dark Universe.
Ben Sisko doesn't feel like this is totally necessary, but as they're kind of hashing this out, another banger gets dropped on them and sales are ripping off like crazy. It's because they've gone to warp. They look outside and they see the star streaks that can only mean that.
Yeah, the telltale warp stripes. And that is fairly concerning. And they, this is not part of the flight plan. But the ship is really ripping now. The damage that is being inflicted here is fairly mysterious, right? Like, it's not really something that they can trace to any one thing. And I sort of thought the implication was going to be that, like, they've gone to warp because somebody is taking, like, super long-range shots at them or something, and it's, like, propelled them into warp speed somehow. I mean, it's a bit fiddly because it does kind of upend some of the stuff we know about warp, like that you have to make a warp bubble around a ship, and that's like a non-trivial thing to do.
Yeah, instead, the metaphor of sails and sailboats and water travel is carried over into this form of space travel because there are these eddies in space made of tachyons, and if you were to come into contact with these things, the thinking is that you would go faster than light. And so this is something that Ben Sisko explains to Jake, but he didn't think tachyon eddies would have any effect on the ship, on the sail ship, because
he's thinking Starfleet vessel. He's not right. Thinking about a ship with big giant solar sails attached to it.
But the ship is fucked, and so they have to contact Deep Space Nine, like, is the point. Like, this is not seen as a good thing, unfortunately.
Yeah. And unfortunately, when they get out the emergency radio, thing is not working.
Yeah, someone dropped it in the zero-gravity toilet.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
At Quark's, Bashir is creeping on Dr. Lenz again. I guess some time has passed, or maybe Dr. Bashir has taken some Brode brand drinking vitamins and is feeling right as rain.
Oh, yeah. A friend of DeSoto emailed us that he's like personal friends with the guy that invented Brode drinking vitamins.
Yeah, I've been trading emails with that guy now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, seems like a cool guy.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you're in touch. Is he going to send us some free samples?
I hope so. He should be a sponsor of the show with how much we've used his product.
Yeah. I mean, I think he should just sponsor us and our lifestyle.
Hard agree.
It's like people only do things because they get paid. And that's just really sad.
Dr. Lenz is really nice.
May I?
Yes.
And they end up having a conversation that goes from 2 seconds of awkward to sitting at a cocktail table, just really enjoying each other's company and sharing notes about New Year's Eve at a party they both went to and about their graduation and about what being stationed on the Lexington is like.
And because Dr. Lenz loomed so large in Bashir's mind, like he knew exactly who she was, but she had, you know, had him pointed out to her at a party and maybe misunderstood who the person was pointing at.
Right.
So assumed that Julian Bashir was an Andorian, which, I mean, that's not an Andorian last name. Bashir? No way. she's surprised to meet him and frankly, a little jealous of the path his life took because this coveted post she'd got on the Lexington did not wind up being the sexy 5-year mission that it was advertised to be. And she had a pretty boring ride for the intervening few years.
This felt like an instance where characters are talking about their experiences, but it's also Star Trek talking about itself. Because Dr. Lenz represents a TNG style of Star Trek. And Dr. Lenz can understand the appeal of what it must be like to do science on Deep Space Nine and not have to go just planet to planet, picking up and setting down and picking up and setting down. Like, her point is that her grass isn't greener than Dr. Bashir's. It's just different grass. And so, like, he needs to let go of whatever professional envy he might have carried with him up until now. It's a really great scene.
And it kind of, without making this point, kind of lays to bed this whole valedictorian salutatorian conflict also. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a stressful thing that they both went through, but it obviously doesn't really have, you know, like, who cares at this point, right? They're professionals and that's behind them. There's nothing that they can do to change what happened back then.
Right. Back on the sail ship, the repairs have continued. And Jake is low-key a little bit paranoid about dying, I think. Like, he's asking questions about life support and their inability to communicate, and he's probably holding a shit in also that he'd really rather let go.
You really project yourself onto everybody. But Commander Sisko is nothing if not great at distracting Jake from space danger.
Yeah.
And one of the little threads that we've had in this episode is that Jake wants to set Sisko up with a freighter captain that he's seen around the station. And Sisko kind of engages him on this subject matter to kind of get Jake off of the nightmare that they are currently experiencing.
She's a freighter captain.
A freighter captain.
And that seems like a deal. It looks like we're going to get a Ben Sisko blind date episode at some point in the future if they choose to continue that storyline. And we also get happy news that Jake Sisko is not going anywhere as a character for at least a year. He says he's going to put off his fellowship. I guess they offer some kind of deferment for this fellowship. So he wants to get more life experience aboard the station before he heads to Earth and pursues his education.
Ben's like, cool, because your writing needs some work.
It's about this time that Gul Dukat blows in another FaceTime, and this time it's from one of three battleships that the Cardassians have deployed to meet this sailing ship as it enters Cardassian space. And it's not to attack them at all that they've been deployed, but in fact to roll out the red carpet. The Cardassians are doing the right thing.
I wanted to be the first one to congratulate you.
I guess. I mean, well, I'm gonna save my feelings on the scene for the did you like portion of the ep, but the button on the episode is a celebration of their arrival, because yeah. Jake and Ben, like, part of the problem with their inability to communicate is they also don't really know where they are. And so yeah. it's Dukat that has hipped them to the idea that they've jumped the Denorius belt. They didn't even, like, that wasn't even an issue, and they're in the Cardassian system. And Jake restates the problem and the solution a couple of times in case the viewer wasn't aware of how this happened, which is helpful.
Yeah.
And Gul Dukat's like, yeah, so your arrival here kind of coincides with our archaeologist digging up one of these ships off of the surface of Cardassia. So everything is sort of meeting up at exactly the same time. Good job. Cue the fireworks like, show.
Wow, what a interesting coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. I guess the Cardassians are going to tow them back to Deep Space Nine. That'd be nice. Yeah.
So, Adam, did this episode grow the beard, or did it grow the board?
I really like the episode up until the fireworks show, Ben. You cannot have the Cardassians celebrate this. You can't. The way this episode should have ended is the Defiant goes and picks up the sail ship, returns her home to Deep Space Nine. They shoot the fireworks off of Deep Space Nine. This is so not in keeping with Cardassian culture, how they feel about the Federation, how they feel about Bajoran culture.
Yeah, like, it's the frog giving the scorpion trip across the river on its back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the scorpion doesn't sting it. And it's like, thanks a lot for the ride, bro.
And then the frog like shoots fireworks when they reach the other side of the river. That doesn't happen.
I think we've mangled that metaphor, but...
It doesn't feel like it was true to the Cardassian way of thinking. And look, I'm not asking for Gul Dukat to be a huge dick about this, but like, he doesn't have to go all the way good and celebratory the way he does here. And that was my main beef with the ep. I thought the ep was fun and cool and interesting for all of the reasons that you especially mentioned earlier. That sail ship is great. I think it's one of the great builds that they've done on this show.
Yeah, really fun.
And this episode also introduces a lot of things that I think are going to be going concerns later, like a Ben Sisko relationship, like a Jake Sisko writer sort of storyline. Right. Like this is it's nice to have a bottle episode again. It's Return of the Bottle, and I don't feel like we've had one of these in a while. Deep Space Nine doesn't do many bottles anymore, I think.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think I like it more than you do, and one thing you bring up a lot is the idea of, like, album song order, and I wonder if this episode punches a little harder if it's a little earlier in the season.
Yeah.
If this had happened, like, right before all the stuff with Inabrin Tain.
Yeah.
Because this isn't in character for Cardassians, but... We have spent a lot of time this season on the idea of the diplomatic relations between the Federation and Bajor and Cardassia improving. And if this seemed like another step on that journey, I think that would have given an interesting false sense of safety before shit really pops off with, secret war fleets and the making secret pacts with the Romulans and stuff.
And it would have represented something to grieve, and by that I mean like a way of life. If we got an episode,
we were so
like
close
this,
to peace.
If we got an episode like this before the Dias cast, then I think what you would think during that is like, well, the party's over. Like, no time for hobbies. Like, we're a war fighting federation now that is gearing up. And what it does is it makes those two episodes insignificant.
Right.
Because if you can just get back to building models after something like that, then what was its true cost?
Yeah. And I wonder if anything is said in this episode that makes it like not like, if you could have like kind of a fan order of the season.
Yeah.
Like, could this just be like episode 15 and not episode 22?
Yeah, you can put the bottles anywhere.
Yeah. So I think that if I'm allowed that concession, I really like the episode. I think that it is primarily undercut by its proximity to those other stories. But on balance, I thought it was a good and fun episode and a nice character change for Sisko, that he's not still harboring this ambition for his son that his son doesn't share.
Well, it is unorthodox, Ben, but I'll allow it.
Adam, in this episode, Jake Sisko receives some delightful communications. Do you want to see if we have any delightful communications in our inbox?
Absolutely.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a personal priority one message here. It's from Matt, Clark, and George, and it's for Lucas. And it goes like this. Happy, probably belated 30th birthday, Lucas. Welcome to your twilight years. Our only hope is that in your advanced age, you don't turn from the young, hip Shatner we know you to be into crusty old Shatner who yells about snowflakes on Twitter. Glory to you and your house. That was meant to be targeted for as close as possible to November 16th. So sorry, Lucas, for how long it took us to get to that.
Lucas now 30 and a half.
Yeah. So maybe even closer to yelling about snowflakes on Twitter. But
A little bit of Shatner shade in that message.
Yeah, Shatner's not great on Twitter.
No.
He was a real dick to some friends of mine on Twitter because he didn't think that they deserved to be verified on Twitter.
Really?
Because he didn't personally know who they were.
Wow.
Yeah. And like he like blocked a whole bunch of people I know because he felt it was unjust that they were verified. Like it cheapened his own being verified.
Old man yells at verified cloud.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I don't think he didn't deserve that shade.
You know, he's touring Wrath of Khan this year. That's a pretty good idea.
It's a good thing that we're done touring Wrath of Khan, right?
Yeah, party's over.
Party is over.
Ben, we have a second priority one message here. It is from Ben. It is for Emily Fitz, the most gorgeous woman in the world. A message goes like this. Happy anniversary, baby girl. These last 2 years have been the best in my life. I'm so happy to see you publishing your books and chasing your dreams. The only things I can guarantee are that I will always love you and that tonight the heavens will know that a warrior is coming.
Whoa.
Very suggestive, Ben.
Ben really believes very strongly that one thing will result from this P1.
Speaking of the ribald written word,
yeah,
Ben's writing a red shoe Jumbotron diary. Pretty nice.
Wow.
Well, good luck with that, Ben, and really, good luck with that, Emily.
Yeah. If you'd like to send a Priority One message, you know how to do it. You go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And they are a great way to support the production of this show.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusa today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Got a video Shimoda for you, Ben.
Hmm.
There is a scene at about the 23:20 mark where Quark is mentioning to O'Brien and Bashir.
God damn it. This is the same Shimoda as me.
The 1-2 move that Morn does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is great. So what happens is Morn is up in the balcony and Quark enters the frame and is telling them about the bet that he's got with Morn. And then there's this reveal of Morn as he's being talked about that is like a horror film bit of framing. It is awesome and hilarious.
It's so funny. Yeah, it is the definitive drunk Shimoda of this of this episode and potentially of the series. It is such a funny bit of direction. Like, we'll get Morn standing here. When the camera swings as Quark walks around the table, we'll just establish that Morn is over on the circular staircase listening in on the conversation. Very funny. Because, the backstory is that Quark and Morn have made a bet on where Bashir's relationship with this other Starfleet doctor goes. Right. And so it's justified, but it's also hilarious.
It's really great. And I feel like in Star Trek, there are very few times where you get shot comedy.
Yeah.
And that's what this is.
There's a couple of moments like that in this episode. There's that moment when Jake comes to let his dad know that he's coming on the big sailing trip, and the reveal is like the camera fades up on a porthole in the hull of the ship, and Jake's head just appears in it, and he's like, it's like a shot from Pee-wee's Playhouse, looking in the that circular window in Pee-wee's front door, you know?
Yeah.
Very funny.
That ship looked really expensive to make for a bottle episode.
Totally.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 3, episode 23, Family Business. Quark returns to his home planet to confront his mother, who has broken the Ferengi law prohibiting females from earning a profit. You know, normally I praise these Amazon descriptions for being by somebody who's actually watched the episode, but if they had, they would know that You never put an article in front of profit in the Ferengi argot. You would never say earning the profit or earning a profit. You would just say earning profit.
Sure. It's like mistakenly saying the Ukraine.
Right. Yeah.
Can't do that.
Just exposes that you don't know anything about what you're talking about.
I know that feeling.
I'm going to queue up, Adam, the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets.
That's right, Ben. It's our board game that determines the way in which we will experience a Greatest Gen episode.
And currently we are on square 60. We could potentially hit a space butthole that would take us back to square 18 for a Quark's bar. We could also hit square 64, which would be a Starship Mine episode, in which we would have to obtain a spaceship model. Each would have to obtain a model spaceship and then build it while recording. So it would just be two distracted dorks making, you know, plastic noises.
That'd be great radio, Ben. That would be the worst episode we'd ever make.
I mean, yeah, but it's on the board, so we would have to do it if we got there.
We would. We do what the board says.
Yeah, the board is the boss, not us.
Right.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm going to go ahead and take this this six-sided virtual dice. Give it a spin. What do you say?
Hit it.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, man. I have rolled a 5, jumping us over both hazards.
Shit.
I'm a little...
I thought for sure we'd be building models, Ben.
I'm a little bummed out, Adam, honestly, because I recently got interested in getting the $800 Millennium Falcon Lego kit.
Whoa.
And I can't really justify spending that kind of money, but I might have talked myself into it had we hit that.
Jeez.
That
that would qualify as building a spaceship model.
Yeah, and it would be a tax write-off, right? Because it would be for work.
Oh, shit. That would have been great. You know what? You can hit it on the comeback. If you hit the wormhole at square 87...
Oh, yeah, we could hit that
wormhole.
It'll
give you another shot at it.
Yeah. Okay. So just a regular old episode. Of course, I still have my rain check here that I could inflict a Quark's bar on you at any time.
That's right.
I was thinking the other day, what would happen if I did that to you, like during another Quark's Bar episode or during Heaven Forfend, a Mournhammered episode?
Or if you did it during the Starship Mine episode. the compounding problems.
Yeah.
I'd have to do it.
You are not safe, Adam.
Yeah. One thing that makes us feel safe week in and week out, Ben, is the ongoing support of our viewership.
Yep.
Those who wish to support the Greatest Generation family of programming, go to MaximumFun.org/donate, where listener support helps keep the Greatest Generation and the Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire going.
Yeah, it is... the number one way we support ourselves doing this project and all of these projects, and we could not do it without you guys, so we really appreciate it. If you want to support in other ways, there are lots of ways to do it. One such is going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a nice review. It helps us rise through the algorithms over there. Also, just like recommending the show to friends, coworkers, family members that you think would enjoy it. That also really helps. And it's one of my favorite things is when we get a note from somebody that says, oh yeah, I took a friend's recommendation and started episode one and I got caught up in 4 months. I just love the show so much.
Yeah, that's the best. Gotta thank our best friends of DeSoto. Of course, by that, you know, I mean Adam Ragusea, who took the great music of one Dark Materia, chopped and screwed it, and turned it into a audio pastiche that we use on both our programming here in the main line and while we're out on tour. Just great, great stuff that he's done for us.
Yeah, we got to thank our buddy Bill Tilly, who makes trading cards of every episode. They always make me laugh. Every week he puts out a whole bunch of new trading cards, and they are a total highlight. And occasionally I'll, you know, just because you miss some of the stuff on Twitter, I'll realize like, oh man, I don't think I've seen Bill's trading cards this week, and I'll have to go back through Bill's old tweets and find them. And it never disappoints. He has made me laugh every single time he's done it.
Always great. That's for sure. J.G. Lendl has been making art quality portfolio prints for every episode that we produce. He puts those out on Sunday. It's one of the great ways to get our viewership hyped before the episode drops on Monday. It's something I also look forward to quite a bit. The guy does great work.
Sure does.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that puts the loaf on its skin.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.